I'll now do the second reading, which is from the Big Book, page 76, Into Action. Can he take them all, everyone? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us to be willing. I'd now like to ask Erica M. from Cedar Rapids, Lower, to speak for 15 minutes. I'll just unmute you.
She's unmuted.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Erica Maynard, alcoholic. It's good to be here. Hi. From Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I really have appreciated everything that that I've heard so far today. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for the kind invitation. My sobriety date is December 30th of 1996. I did not pick that date. I was struck sober. I didn't want to be sober. I wanted to be sober for like 6 months. And then I found out that I had alcoholism. And I have a home group, Full Measure Speaker Group, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And we meet on Friday nights in Cedar Rapids, and then on Wednesday nights at 8 and 7 o'clock Central on Fridays. And conference in Colorado, and I've been going most years. I've missed 2 years since 98. So love that conference. And it's good to be here with family. And if you don't feel like family yet, stick around. You know, one of the things that I really appreciate about these things that we do is not about the intellectual enlightenment or learning new cute little phrases or things, but they are, it's like you're pointing at that power. And through subtraction, help me to find what's blocking me from this power, as everybody has so astutely spoken of, that I cannot be separate from. It was really instrumental in my recovery to find out, to discover, to realize that I can never be disconnected from God. I can feel disconnected, but I cannot be disconnected. That helped me tremendously to know that. I just actually did step six with the gal. I read through it today with the gal. I listened to her fifth step, and then I gave her the directions to finish this fifth step for the hour. And then what I do in to finish up the fifth step when I take that hour of prayer and meditation is I make a list of what's objectionable, because in our 10th step, and our 11th step, you know, we're continuing to watch for these problematic patterns, right? And my husband always says, if all you're going to do in inventory is right, don't bother. When I was in early sobriety, I really looked at my 6th and 7th step kind of like crossing my fingers, closing my eyes, and flipping a penny in the wishing well, hoping for magic wand God to come and take this away, right? Where I didn't have any personal responsibility. And I would write my inventory and do my fifth step, and I would take my 6th and 7th step, and I would put my inventory on a shelf, and I would go make my amends. And then 3 or 6 months later, I'm writing the same inventory with the same people. I'm still being a jerk. And in AA, in Big Book AA, we have this thing where we say, in amends, we don't say we're sorry. We say, I was wrong. Well, you know what? If I'm saying I'm wrong, and 3 months later, I go back and I say, oh, I was wrong again. And 3 months later, I go back and say, oh, I'm still wrong. That's not what we're asked to do here. We're asked to demonstrate. And our book tells us that the point is that we were willing to grow along spiritual lines. And in my experience, that's not necessarily true. Speaking for myself, I have not been willing to grow along spiritual lines when it's hard. And so what I've learned here is that we have prayers in the fourth step. This was our course, and many, many prayers in our book, that when these things crop up again, right, that I'm watching for them. A gal I sponsor says, she draws the analogy of a bird watcher as compared to a bird noticer. And I'm not just supposed to wait to notice these things. I'm supposed to actively be on the lookout for her. You know, that little chick that lives inside me that's trying to kill me. I'm supposed to be watching for her, because if I get afraid, she crops up. That's very different than just waiting to notice, right? A bird watcher goes and they know what they're looking for, right? And they're watching actively. It's an active word. It's not a passive thing. And so when I'm in, I've got my list of things that are objectionable, and it's not like I go work on them. It's not like that. I'm asking God for strength, but I'm on the lookout, right? I'm asking God. I also have a list of my values that I discovered that I didn't know I had, right? When I live outside of my value system, of values I may or may not even know I have, I become restless, irritable, and discontent. And then I still think it's you. But I can't connect it to my own conduct without your help. So I've got my list when I go into this sixth and seventh step. And when I was in early sobriety, can he take them now, everyone? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. And I remember that, like, we'll not let go of these things. Like, why wouldn't they do that? You know, like, of course, I'm always letting it go, right? I'm always letting it go. And what I didn't see was I was that person. I was that person that still clung to everything, because I would put, like I said, I would put down my inventory. I would go make my face-to-face amends, right? But then I wouldn't change. I didn't do anything different. There was no active consideration in my day. And I was doing all the things. I was doing all the things and all the three legacies. I was doing my 11th step every day. I was practicing a 10th step, I thought, but I wasn't looking for the things that I had just inventoried that I'm supposed to be walking into the consciousness of the presence of God with, that I'm supposed to be in a position of neutrality, right? I didn't know how to do that. And so what I've learned how to do is take that list into my 10th and 11th step in the morning. Today at 23 years sober, I don't run into direct amends. I had this experience once with a gal that I worked with. She was a secretary for a clerical staff for a bunch of us at the office. And every time I would give her a job to do, right, I asked for a meeting with her. And so it was me and her and my boss. And she said that I was condescending in this meeting. And I was like, what? In my mind, I thought, I do an 11th step at night. There's no way that I'm condescending. Like, I surely would have seen that. But what I've learned because of you and because of my sponsor is to say, you know, I don't see that. I'm not saying it's not happening, but I'm willing to keep an open mind about it. And so I went home and I actually kept an open mind about it, right? And I prayed and I looked and I saw that she was absolutely right, because every time when I would go to her every month and I would give her the same directions for this that we'd been doing for 5 years every month, and she'd say, huh, what? I was like rolling my eyes. I was like very condescending, and it broke my heart, and it helped me to see how self-deceived I can be, right? I mean, I already knew kind of, but helped me to really see. And what I ended up doing was I didn't run to her and make amends right away. She wasn't interested in any words, right? She's interested in me not being a condescending, arrogant jerk, right? So I just prayed really hard, and I prayed to bring the light into the office. And I just really practiced spiritual principles around that relationship. And a couple months later, I approached her and said, hey, remember when you said that in that meeting? And she was like, yeah. And I said, I just want to tell you that you were right. And I didn't see it before you brought it to my attention. And thank you for bringing it to my attention. And I hope that you found that my conduct towards you has been much more respectful, because I've certainly tried to, and I hope that it never happens again, because you don't deserve to be treated like that. And it's very simple, but it's not easy, because the price has to be paid, right? And so instead of engaging in that conduct, I have to ask God for strength, right? I have to ask God for help. I can't do it on my own. But it's an active engagement today. It's not a passive thing. It's like, step work is very cumulative. So the more that I work the steps, the more that I build on this spiritual foundation, the more that I see I'm wrong, right? The more that I see how wrong I can be, the more I see how right I can be. Right. And, I heard somebody say it once, and they said, I need to keep it as a real piece of business with God. I cannot keep things at the level of complaint. I have to move them into a real piece of business with God, that I'm actively engaged, not in trying to fix it because I lack power. I do not have the power to do this. I don't have the power to change. I don't have the power to be kind, to not get angry when my kids don't, you know, do what when I tell them 20 times, I don't have that kind of power. But that's why we have these prayers. God, grant me strength to go out from here to do your bidding. When they offend me again, you know, I have little 3x5 cards that I have my gals put everywhere, right? Of the 7 prayers, and this was our course. I don't like calling it the sick man's prayer, because it's still assuming that you're the sick man, but I'm the one that needs to write inventory. You know what I'm saying? Everything in our book, for me, it's weird to talk about one or two steps, because everything kind of is all pointing at this relationship with God, right? As I disclose myself to God, right? Or as I draw near to God, he discloses himself to us, right? 5 minutes. What else do I want to say about... I want to read something, actually. I loved how everybody's bringing it into sponsorship, because it is really not about me, right? I would rather be home with my kids most of the time. My husband's sitting here. Most of the time. I love my kids, right? You developed in me the capacity to love. Right? You developed that in me, because when I had my first son, when I was still drinking, I didn't have the feelings that I saw people on TV have. Right. It's just not about me. It's about the people that are going to be helped down the road. Right. And, I don't know how far out those ripples are going to go, when I suit up and show up. But it's my friend Tom always says, you don't give it away to keep it, you give it away to get it, right? And I loved how Bill said that about the fifth step. The best one is the one that you hear. And I've heard other people share non-conference approved literature, so I'm hoping that that's okay, because my sponsor gave this to me, and it's really profound to help me to understand what happens in the sixth and seventh step. And I'll just close with this. So it's the refiner's touch. It says there was a group of women in a Bible study. And as they were studying a chapter, they came across a verse that says, he will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. The verse puzzled the women, and they wondered what this statement meant about the character and the nature of God. One of the women offered to find out about the process of refining silver and get back to the group at their next Bible study. That week, the woman called up a silversmith and made an appointment to watch him work. She didn't mention anything about the reason for her interest in silver beyond the curiosity of the process of refining silver. As she watched the silversmith, he held a piece of silver over the fire, let it heat up, and he explained that in refining silver, one needed to hold the silver in the middle of the fire where the flames were the hottest, so as to burn away all the impurities. The woman thought about God holding us in such a hot spot. Then she thought again about the verse, that he sits as a refiner and purifier of silver. She asked the silversmith if it were true that he had to sit there in front of the fire the whole time the silver was being refined. The man answered that yes, he not only had to sit there holding the silver, but he had to keep his eyes on the silver the entire time it was in the fire. For if the silver was left even a moment too long in the flames, it would be destroyed. The woman was silent for a moment. Then she asked the silversmith, How do you know when the silver is fully refined? He smiled at her and answered, oh, that's the easy part, when I see my image reflected in it. So if today you're feeling the heat of the fire, remember that God has his eye on you and will keep his hand on you and watch over you until he sees his image in you. And I love that because life is not easy for me because I'm me. And it doesn't matter who you are. I show up as me. And it is not easy to get here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it is really not easy to stay here. And the kinds of things that I have had to walk through the fire with are not fun. I went through 2 years, 13 and a half to 15 and a half years, where I did not feel God. And I could not feel the presence of God. It was a very dark time for me. And but I still kept doing the things. I kept doing the drill. I kept being sponsored. I kept close to my people. I kept doing the 11th step, right? I kept going to meetings. I kept doing my home group. I kept sponsoring women because I was told by my elders that it would happen. Of course, I was arrogant enough to think it would never happen to me, but of course, we know it did. We can expect that we're going to have to walk through the fire. And if I never walked through the fire, I would have nothing to offer anybody else. So if you are having a difficult time, know that you are exactly where you're supposed to be for God to take you where you need to go. Like that's the thing here, right? That I can only be right here, right now. I can't get good enough to get God. I have to come just as I am. And I have to be allowed by this fellowship to come just as I am as well, right? I didn't come here behaving to the chagrin of my husband probably, but I say to him often, honey, I would do better if I could. And he says, I know. That's all I got.
Thanks, Erica.